Well, the prison ministry has meant so much in my life that I feel I'm really privileged to be a guest speaker here today. Work in our prisons in Belfast turned my complete life around. And I would like to share with you some of the experiences of that prison work. And as I'm doing this, I want you to think not just of what I or the teachings of Christian Science did for these individuals, but also for what these individuals did for me. They helped so much in my own self-redemption that I feel I owe them a debt of gratitude. And I would like to thank them today, although they're not here. I'd like to begin by just reading a few verses from the Bible which helped me to take up prison work. Then shall the king say to them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee, and hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer, and say unto them, Verily, I say unto you, insomuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. That's the purpose of prison work. And I would like to say to you today that this work, whether it's a prison or any other type of institution, is highly important. Not just for the people that we could help, but for our own churches and for our own selves and for our growth spiritward, because I learned so much through the work that I did. I would like to tell you, first of all, how I got started in this work. When the troubles in Northern Ireland were really bad at their peak, and our jails were overflowing with prisoners, they felt the jails were not big enough. They couldn't get them in there. I remember that I used to stand up at the business meetings in our church. And I did this for 18 months. Every time we had a business meeting, I would stand up and say, why does our church not have a prison minister? That's what we call them in Britain. You call them chaplains here. A prison minister or a visitor. And immediately a big silence would go over the church. And no one would answer. You know the feeling? Yeah, I can see that you do. And I used to wonder why they didn't answer me. And I got very frustrated because I felt there were so many people in our prisons who didn't deserve to be in there, who simply got caught up in all this violence, and that they needed our help and support. Well, after I had done this at every meeting for 18 months, I went to a member of the church who was also on our board. And I said, why is it that no one ever answers me when I stand up at the meetings? And she said, because, you foolish woman, our prisons are full of bad men. And we don't need them in our church. Well, believe me, I was very angry at that answer. And I kept thinking, just wait until the next business meeting. But it was fortunate for me that there was quite a gap between then and the next business meeting, because if it had happened within 2 days, I think I would have created a little war in our church. But as the days went on, I began to think about it. That's not the way you go about it. That's not the way to pray about it. If your church needs a prison minister or chaplain, you'll have one. And you don't need to fight anyone for it. And because God governs your church. I hope he's governing this microphone. How's that? Okay. So I began to quieten my own thought. Now, I had just been appointed circulation rep for the Christian Science Monitor. I had 5 children and lived quite a long way away from town. And because of that, and because of the troubles, it was difficult to get buses. No one in church ever asked me to do any work. And I asked someone at church once, why did you never ask me to do any work? And she said, well, because you live so far away and it's difficult for you to get in and you've 5 children. And I said, well, why don't you let me decide that? Oh, she said, good, we need workers. So the next thing I've gone again. The next thing I had, a letter from, it's gone, has it?
Yeah.
No? Sounds dead to me. Is there anybody back there? There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Huh? Right. Okay. We're on here. Good. Good. So the next thing was, I had a letter from the board of my church asking me to come to meet them. Well, I was so excited all the way there. I had to take 2 buses. And I kept thinking, Father, I don't care what this work is. I promise you, I will do it, and I do it with all my heart. I was so willing to do this work. Well, when I got to the board meeting, they said, you have volunteered to do some work, so we have found something for you to do. And I said, great, what is it? And they said, we would like you to be circulation rep for the Christian Science Monitor. Well, I looked at them in amazement and I said, oh, I couldn't do that. And they said, why? And I said, I don't even subscribe to the Christian Science I can't afford it. It's too American. And I'm not well enough educated. I am the last person in the church to do that work. Well, as soon as I got the words out, I remembered all the promises I'd been making. So in the end, I said, oh, sorry, I took that back. I will do it. Well, they gave me a box, and they said, this is a mother church appointment. And here is all the literature that you need to get you started. This is between you and the Mother Church. So, I brought my box home in the bus. I keep going off the air, you know. I brought my box home on the bus, and when I got it home, I looked into all these papers and flyers for, forms to buy the monitor at a cheap rate. Subscriptions, that's right. Subscriptions to the Christian Science Monitor. Well, I became very enthusiastic, and I filled in all these subscription forms and sent them out to all my church members because I thought they were really cheap and a good bargain offer. Well, with the result that I got 25 replies of people saying they'd like one of these subscriptions. And I sent them to Boston. And about a week later, I had a call from Boston, and they said, "Where did you find these subscription notices?" I said, "In a box that someone had given me." They said, "Did you know that they're 9 years out of date?" I said, "No, I didn't know." Well, they said, "We're so grateful that you've got 25 people in Northern Ireland interested in the Christian Science Monitor, that we're going to let you have them at that price." So I took two of these subscriptions and sent them into two of our prisons. Now, you had to know a name of someone inside prison to be able to send a monitor in there, and I didn't know anyone. So I asked a man from our church who used to visit at the prison, and he got me the names of two people. And I sent the subscriptions along to these two people, and these two men, who were in different prisons, began to write to me. Now this was very interesting, because both these men, although they were in different prisons, were in for the same crime. They were both in jail for murder. And it was the first murder to spark off our troubles 22 years ago. There were three Protestant men in a bar, and they had been told that the IRA were planning to do some things in Northern Ireland, that they had been gathering all these bombs and ammunition. They had been told that in their drinking clubs, they were to look out for spies. And one night they were in this drinking club, and they saw a man they knew was a stranger. They took him outside and they questioned him. They beat him up, and one of these three men had a gun, and they shot him, and the man died. Now it turned out that the man was an IRA supporter. He was in the IRA. He was the first man to have an IRA funeral. There was a very big court case about this, and these three Protestant men were to be the last three men hanged in Northern Ireland. But at the last minute, they were reprieved from hanging. But they were sentenced to 25 years in prison, to serve at least 25 years. Now, one of the men decided that he was a criminal. So he was put in one prison. The other man decided that he was a political prisoner, and he was a leader in the Ulster Volunteer Force. He was a leader of the loyalist terrorists in our community. The third man was also in the first jail. These men began to write me very interesting letters. And one of them, whose name was Bobby, I'll call him Bobby so you know who I'm talking about. One of them, whose name was Bobby, wrote me long letters. He told me that he was ill with diabetes. He said he was already blind in one eye and that he had only been given 3 months to live because they said they had diagnosed his case too late. The third man that was in prison with them had died just a few weeks previous to this, also from diabetes, and he was blind in both eyes before he died. So Bobby said to me, "I am not asking you for healing. I don't think I deserve to be healed. But would you help me to get a better understanding of God before I die? Because I know I have to go and meet my Maker. And I would like to understand God better." They both appreciated the Christian Science Monitor very well. And the other one, who was the political prisoner, didn't seem to want to know anything about Christian Science, but loved the Monitor and wanted to continue with that. Well, I began writing to Bobby, and he wrote me such interesting letters. I sent him in a copy of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health, the Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. I sent him in some other literature, and he began to read it and ask me questions, and he would put these questions on his letters. Well, one day I had a letter from him, and he asked me if I would come and visit him in the prison. He would like to have a talk with me. He said in order for me to do that, I would have to get a pass from his mother. She was the only one who had a pass to visit him, and she could only visit him once a month. So I had to go along to his home and meet his mother. And I've always been glad that I did that, because it gave me such insight to the lives of prisoners, to their family background. And here was this little woman, and she'd had to move house 7 times since her son had been in prison, because every time the IRA found out where they were, they threatened her or her family. She had to keep moving, and her husband had recently died. She finally found a little house. It was very tiny, and she took me up to a bedroom, and she said, "This is Bobby's room." She'd had it all painted and redecorated. She opened the wardrobe doors. She showed me all these new clothes that she had bought for Bobby coming out, all the new underwear that was in the drawers for Bobby coming home. And then he'd only served 9 years of 25 years. She had a little post office savings book, and every week she put the equivalent of $3 in this book. And she said, "That's a little nest egg for Bobby when he comes out." And she said, "Myrtle, will you pray that I live long enough to see my son come home?" And I promised her that I would. Well, I went along to the prison and I visited Bobby. And I must tell you, he wasn't a pleasant sight to look at. His eye was way, way down his cheek, a lot of matter coming out of it. And he was so thin that I felt I could almost smell death from him. We talked for a long time about God and his relationship to God and what he was getting from what he was reading. When suddenly, as it was time for me to go, he said, "Do you think that you could pray for me to be healed?" Well, I was shocked. And I said, Bobby, I am not a practitioner. And I don't think that I could possibly take on a case like this. But I tell you what I'll do. I'll ask a practitioner to pray for you. He said, I don't want a practitioner. I want you. He said, I believe that God sent you to me. And he said, I'll take my chances with you. He said, even if I die, I won't blame you. Well, I said, well, that's a great help. I said, Bobby, I can only promise to do my best. Well, I came home. Instead of catching a bus, I decided to walk home. I was deep in thought, and I wondered if I realized what I had taken on. I had promised this man that I would do this for him, but I didn't know if I was capable of doing it. Indeed, I didn't know if I had a right to do it, because he was a murderer. And because of him and the other two men, they had sparked off these troubles in Northern Ireland, which had caused so many murders since that I really felt, I don't think I've got any right to do this. Well, for 3 days and 3 nights, I battled with this. And then one night, I couldn't sleep. And I got up and I said, Father, I want to have a serious talk with you. I only volunteered to be a circulation man. And you've thrown all this in my lap. And I don't know how to cope. So you better tell me. And a wee voice said, and you better listen. I said, all right, Father, I'm listening. And the voice said, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. I said to myself, had you got that message right, Merton? You had better write that down, because you start arguing with God again. So I wrote it down on a piece of paper in big, big letters. This is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. Well, I said, Father, you start telling me about your son. What's your son like? And back came all these lovely answers. He's made in my very image and likeness. The exact image and likeness of me. So then I knew that he must be spiritual and not material. He must be good and not evil. He must be healthy and not sick. He must be intelligent and not ignorant and non-intelligent. I wrote down all these qualities. And then the thoughts of innocence kept coming to my thought. So I looked up the dictionary meaning of innocent. I think my own dictionary at home had some better words for this, but the one that I've been using here says, innocent, free from sin, evil, or guilt, doing or thinking nothing morally wrong, pure, not guilty of a specific crime or offense, guiltless, free from harmful effects or cause that does not harm, injure, or corrupt, not malignant. Isn't that interesting? Not malignant. Without guile or cunning. Artless. Simple. a person knowing no evil or sin, such as a little child. Well, I began to think, that's how man is. That's how God made his child. And this man's real spiritual identity, as God knows him, is innocent. Webster also says, innocent as the snow, without spot or blemish. And I realized that that's how God's Son was. So I wrote down all these lovely thoughts. And suddenly, I began to be free myself. Not only from this picture of him being this awful sick man, but from a picture of him being an awful sinful man, an evil man. I began to see his innocence, his purity. I also looked up the definitions of purge and pure and purity and purify. Well, after a few weeks, and this man was on insulin, he was also on a diet, and they told him he would always have to be on insulin and on this diet. And it shows how ignorant I was at the time. I never even worried about it. I never even asked him to come off it or do anything. It didn't bother me in the least, because I knew that insulin couldn't take away his innocence or perfection, or it couldn't give it to him. It was his by God-given right. Well, slowly this man began to respond. He began to put on a little weight and to feel more energy. Well, then I was coming to New York for the very first time in 1976 to a class instruction. And I went along to visit Bobby and I said, I won't be here for 3 weeks, Bobby, because I'm going to New York. Well, he began to cry. And he said, oh, please, you can't leave me now when I'm doing so well. I said, I'm not leaving you, Bobby. You're coming in my suitcase. And I said, everything I learn while I'm in New York, I will be applying to you every day. I will be praying for you, I promise. And I did that. I had 2 weeks of class instruction right here in New York, and everything that I learned every day, I applied it to Bobby. Then at the end of the 2 weeks, I had some days up in Boston, and I flew home. I went to church on a Wednesday night. I think I arrived home on the Tuesday. And a man who was not then a member of our church, the man who gave me the names of these two prisoners, stood up in our church and said that he had just witnessed a miracle, that he was visiting someone in the prison on Saturday when he met this man named Bobby. And this man, he said, was dying of diabetes, and he's been completely healed. He said he was blind in one eye, his eye is back to normal, his sight is normal, he has put on weight. Well, I couldn't believe it. After all that praying, still didn't believe it. I ran up to him. I said, is that true? He said, yes, it is true, and his mother wants you to call him straight away. Well, I went home and I called his mother, and she said, oh, Mark, we couldn't wait until you come home. Isn't it wonderful? My son is completely healed. She said, now, Merton, won't you pray that he gets out? She said, because I want to see my son while I'm alive. I want him home. And I promised her that God takes us all away. The very next day, I got the mother's pass, and I went back up to the prison. And although that room that we were visiting in was full of other prisoners and their children and guards, and it was all so noisy. Bobby and I kissed and hugged, and we joined hands with each other, and we danced round that room. I think people thought we were mad. We were just so very, very grateful to God. And he said, "You will stay with me, you will pray with me." And I said, "Yes, I would." Well, soon after that, not many weeks after that, I had a call one day from a prison chaplain, not a Christian Scientist. And he said, "You don't know who I am. I'm the chaplain of this prison." He said, "I want to congratulate you for the wonderful job that you have done with Bobby." He said, "Do you know that he was one of the worst prisoners in here?" He said, "He fought the establishment. He beat up guards." He said, "He was such a difficult prisoner. And since you healed him," he said, "he's been a transformed character." He said, "As a matter of fact, I came in here today," he said, "I feel as if I have the flu." And I was in the prison yard, and I met Bobby. And Bobby said, "How are you today, sir?" And he said, "I feel awful." And Bobby said, "Hold out your hand." He held out his hand, and Bobby wrote a telephone number on it. He said, "You go and call that woman, and you will be great." And he told him that I was the woman who had helped him. So he said, "I'm calling not to ask you for help. I have my own faith and understanding. But I wondered if you would like to be Bobby's spiritual advisor." He said he has put on his card that he is a Christian Scientist. And we don't have any Christian Science chaplains. "Would you like to come in to our prison as Bobby's advisor? And that means that you'll always have a room of your own. You can come in when you like. You can stay as long as you like." Well, our church had a prison minister, and guess who it was? That's what happens when you volunteer. But they have a saying in the Navy that one volunteer is worth 10 enlisted men. And I think that that's true. Well, wonderful things began to happen with Bobby. It didn't end there. Because the prison doctors acknowledged that Bobby's sight was restored. But they said to him that once you have diabetes, you have it for life. And you can never go off insulin or this special diet. And Bobby said, "I know I'm healed. So to prove them wrong, I'm going on a fast for a week. And I want you to support me." And I promised him that I would. And I supported Bobby, and he fasted for a week. He took nothing but water. And at the end of that week, he said he felt healthier and better than he ever felt in his life. The prison authorities acknowledged his complete healing and took him off the insulin and the diet. But Bobby went on from strength to strength. He began to take young boys under his wing who were 17. He had just come into prison. They got caught up in our troubles. He began to tell them ways that they could use their time in prison to educate themselves so that they would go out better people. And he himself began to take all sorts of exams and to further his own education. One of the things he wanted to do was to learn German, the German language. So I used to bring him in German heralds. And one day I went to visit him. He told me that the woman who taught him German came to teach him one day, and she said, "I don't think I'd be able to stay because I feel ill." And Bobby said to her, "Would you like me to pray for you?" She said she would, and he gave her a German Herald. She took it home with her, and Bobby prayed for her that night, and she came in the next day completely free. Then Bobby began to have little services in his cell alone each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. He met a Roman Catholic who was also in there for murder, and this man had been studying to be a priest. He was studying for the priesthood, and his brother got shot and was killed. He was so embittered by this killer that he joined the IRA, and he went out and murdered a few people in retaliation, and he was put in prison. And Bobby and him became great friends. And every Sunday evening at 7 p.m., Bobby and this young man read our lesson sermon from the Christian Science Quarterly, and they read three hymns together. And Bobby worked out his own readings as well. They did this every week. Then Bobby had a sister who was troubled with goiter. Are you familiar with that disease? And she had quite a problem. The medical authorities told her she would have it all her life, that there wasn't a cure for it, and she would have to go on with this. Well, he tried to get her to come and see me, but because she wasn't a churchgoer, she wouldn't come. So one day I went to visit him, and he was very troubled. And I said, "What's the matter, Bobby?" He said, "It's my sister. She looks so terrible, and yet she won't come and see you." He said, "Do you know what she said to me today? She said, 'Why don't you pray for me, Bobby?'" And I said, "Why don't you?" He said, "You must be joking. I'm in here for murder. And I'm in prison." I said, "You know more than your sister. Don't you read the lesson sermon every day and every Sunday night? You start applying it to your sister and to this situation, because that's what I did." Do you know that in less than a month, his sister was healed? And Bobby was right there in the prison. He helped many, many people in that prison. He helped people to get off the effects of drugs. Even in our prisons, they were giving them drugs because there were so many prisoners, they were so understaffed, it was easier to give them drugs and keep them quiet. And Bobby helped people to get off them. Finally, one day, he said to me, "Would you help me to overcome loneliness?" He said, "When I was first imprisoned, I was engaged to be married. And when I got put in prison, the girl broke off the engagement. I've never heard from her since." He said, "Do you think that you could help me to overcome this terrible loneliness? Because I feel that by the time I get out, it's going to be too late for me to marry." He said, "How do Christians, scientists, work about loneliness?" I said, "We would pray to know our own completeness in God. We would start to get our relationship to God right, to know that you're already wedded to God. So if you're wedded to God, you're wedded to good. You're wedded to love. You're wedded to truth and health and joy and peace and everything that God is. You're already wedded to that." He said, I could accept that. So he went along with that. And after a few months, he began to say to me, "You know, I don't feel alone anymore." He said, "Last night, Myrtle, I was sitting right in the window of my prison, looking through the bars up at the moon. And he said, I felt so free that I said to myself, do you know I'm freer than a lot of people out there? He said, I am free. I found my freedom right in here. I feel that I'm a free man. He wrote me a lovely poem at the time about freedom. He used to write a lot of poetry. Well, soon after that, a young boy who was only 16 and a half was brought into prison. His father had been killed, and he went out in his anger and shot somebody, and he was put into prison. And Mother took him under his wing. And soon the mother came up to prison to visit her son. And her son said, I want you to meet my friend Bobby. So Bobby met the mother, and they began to write to each other. And Bobby soon found he already had a complete family. Bobby then began to say, when he met the woman, could you pray that I get out? I said, Bobby, you're doing such a good job in here, I don't want you out. I'm glad to know that you're here. But I said, I will pray about that, Bobby. I know that you're already free. And no law, and no judge, and no sentence can keep you in here. There's only one record of you, and that's the one that God holds. I read a Bible verse to him that said, my record is on high. My witness is in heaven. I said, that's your record. That's the only record there is of you. Unblemished Son of God is stamped on your bum, and nothing can ever remove it. He accepted that. And in July that year, Bobby was released from prison and was married in August. He already had a ready-made family. Am I off the air again? I don't know what keeps happening here. Well, Bobby got married and had a lovely ready-made family. But you know, the highlight of my week or days was always to visit Bobby. I often went into that prison feeling worried and depressed by my own problems. But his love and joy and gratitude and inspiration were so uplifting to me that often he helped me. And he used to say to me, I want to thank you for my regeneration. I said, Bobby, I want to thank you for mine. Because I said, I was really believing that man was also a sinner. And I needed to learn that lesson. And I said, I am so grateful that you were never hanged, that you had the opportunity to share this experience with me, that we became such tremendous friends. Not long after that, after Bobby got out, I had a telephone call one night from a woman in great distress. It was about 10 o'clock in the evening, and she said, please, could you pray for my husband? She said, he's in hospital, he's dying with cancer, and he's only been given 3 days to live. She said, he's only 40, and we have 5 children. And she said, he's in such and such a hospital. Would you go up there tomorrow and visit him? I said, how do you know about me? And she said, well, my husband was in prison, and he met a man named Bobby. And he was so inspired by this Bobby and by his healing that tonight when I went to visit him, she said, he's so much in pain, he was screaming out loud, but he said, please find Bobby or his mother or somebody, get this woman's telephone number and she can help me. Well, I came off the phone. I'm off it again. Do it again, Steve.
Test 1, 2, test. Can you hear me?
I think it's a feminist, this one.